Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Feed Your Head. Tonight, in our first hour, we have Neil Gould, and in our second hour, we have Ariel Montserrat. Now, Neil is one of those, almost a Renaissance man. If you go to www.exopolitics.hongkong.hk, you will find out more than you found out on a lot of websites. He's also the author of Close Encounters of the ADHD Kind, and he's a board director of the Expo Politics Institute, founder of Expo Politics Hong Kong, and a member of the Expo Politics World Network. He works with the energy problems around the world, alternative energy, I think basically water, and is very concerned about what we're doing today and what we'll be doing tomorrow. So, Neil from Hong Kong, hello.
How are you, Ruthann? And thank you very much for inviting me to your show.
I'm great. I'm so happy to have you here.
It's a pleasure.
So many questions. And I want to start out, you were born in Durham, South Africa.
Correct.
So could you tell us a little bit about that, just the experience, and what happened to you as a child or a young man?
Yeah, well, I was born in, my parents are British, but I was born in South Africa, stayed there for 19 years, grew up right in the middle of the apartheid era, the separation, the forced separation of black and white people, and had to witness the going-ons of unfairness and the terrible exploitation, and at the same time had my first extraterrestrial experiences, if you like, from the age of 6 years old, where the first experience that I have very, very vague memories of was the I try to put it into language, would be the downloading of what Mary Rodwell, the researcher, calls knowledge bombs, sort of a downloaded template of a form, a method of understanding and raising of your consciousness as time goes on in the future. This was subsequently followed up by various other encounters which became face-to-face. And this led me to do some minor activism in the face of apartheid. In other words, befriending certain non-white, as they would call them, people in certain areas, helping, bringing food in, and what have you. It was this raising of consciousness that was very, very important and was the prime, in my belief, the prime purpose for the extraterrestrial context that took place.
I see. And now, Mary Rodwell is a hypnotherapist, I believe. Am I calling her correctly? I know she has helped a lot of people who've had experiences like yours.
Yeah, she's amazing lady. I mean, she's had close on 2,000, she has 2,000 clients, and she really deals with the positive side of, let's say, consenting encounters. This field, when you study the field of abduction, it is really muddied, because what we find with abduction is you have this influence of MALAB, military abduction, and it's very difficult to draw the line between what is a pure consenting encounter and that of an unconsenting encounter, an abduction where all hell is let loose, and the poor, I use the word victim when it comes to MALAB, really doesn't know the reality from the non-reality. So okay. Mary is very good at that.
The military intervention, is that from us or from the others?
It may very well be a mixture of both. It's more than likely, you know, back engineering of abductees to see what the abductees have learned through their encounters. So many of these people, Melinda Leslie, Niara Isley, well-known people. Dr. Lammer is an expert researcher on this. He's been warned off a few times, but basically they are abducted themselves In fact, I have a film on YouTube. I made of an interview and animated it with Melinda Leslie. It can be watched. If you just put my name into YouTube and Melinda Leslie, you'll see it. And there is basically drugs are introduced. The women are sometimes raped, abused, and this has an ability to break down certain parts of the memory processing and implant new memories. It's a very, very muddied area, and it's all got to do with the counterintelligence program against contactees.
Right. Well, while you were still in South Africa and having some of these experiences, did you talk about them to anyone, like your family or friends?
Well, initially, I did speak to my mother about it, especially when this rather short gentleman wearing robes and very bony came into my room and started to communicate with me. My mother, the next day, perhaps tried to put me at ease and told me it was her.
Oh.
It was one way of handling it. But, you know, it doesn't fit in anywhere into your paradigm. And, you know, sort of seeing orbs with your eyes closed and open led my parents to send me to a psychologist. I never forget the guy's name, Bob Mutirkwa.
And I'll never forget.
And I was in his office, and they appeared while he was talking to me. And I remember I had the guy on his knees, and we were looking at the wall, and I was pointing out he's going where, and the nurse came in, and we were both on our knees staring at the wall. So that made him look rather stupid. But I met him years later, and he was quite open to the whole subject.
Oh, okay. You mean the nurse saw them also?
No, the nurse saw the two of us on the knees.
Oh, she saw the two of you down there, wondering
what's going on.
Well, I'm glad that he opened up.
He did. Totally opened up. I mean, he's quite a bright guy. But, I mean, these encounters didn't stop, and they haven't stopped even until now, to a certain extent.
Yeah. Well, now you live in Hong Kong on a ship, boat-class ship, and I'm quite envious in a good way. Of that. What made you go to Hong Kong?
You know, I was in business in the UK.
Ah.
And it really was a mixture of all sorts of interventions, if that's the correct word. Some very difficult to describe, but it revolved around business going to China and opening up a factory rather than importing from China and receiving the rubbish that they ship out.
Oh.
I thought I'd go there and make it myself. And I basically left on my own, left the family, the kids behind. It was very, very tough, extremely tough. And gave myself a little bit of time to set up. And I managed to do it after 1.5 years. I set up a rather large appliance factory and shipping out. And things basically worked out. And I was able to call for my family to come over, which was one of the happiest days of my life because they used to come back. Kids wouldn't leave. Go to bed at night, and I sneak off in the morning to the airport, heartbroken. And I've just described all this in my book.
It's really sad because, you know, some people love being away from the family, but like you, it was very, very sad. Well,
yes. So
was one of the reasons, besides the business, the fact that, now I can be wrong, correct me if I am, it seems to me that there's been a lot of sightings around the Hong Kong area, and that a lot of people in Hong Kong have had experiences?
Yeah, I do tell people, you know, the pretty amazing one we had out here, really, you know, makes the Phoenix Lights look like something very small, although it wasn't, because we had 4 ships over Hong Kong, and I was standing below them with many witnesses, thinking all the time in the year 2000 that we'd wake up in the morning, it would be in the TV and the newspaper. Not a word. Nothing.
Wow.
What was great was that some years later, there was a documentary on TV, which I happened to be invited to be in. But I didn't see the whole film. I wasn't aware of what else they were filming. And apparently they filmed these residents on the Wah Foo Estate in the western side of Hong Kong. And it came out, and they just see what I saw.
Wow, that was like, okay. Well, you know, I have heard, and I don't know, tell me what you think. I've heard that a lot of people don't see because it's so alien to them as far as their belief system.
They actually
don't see. Well, some of us may. I only did once, but I was, if you want to use the word believer before that, but some people, they say, just don't see them. And because it would destroy them almost. I mean, their subconscious thinks it would.
So, yeah.
Which could have been, you know, at the time, like when you were on the floor at your doctor's, and maybe he just wasn't ready for whatever reason.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it is a great mix of this issue of this worldview, you know, the way you're programmed, what you're programmed to see and to accept. It's rather strange the way habits are formed. Like if I had to stand on the corner of the road and hand out $100 bills, some people would take them and some people just wouldn't believe that they would be real, that you'd be handing them out.
Right.
It's process. Now, when we were watching these four craft in Hong Kong, a kilometer across each one.
Wow.
For 3 hours, you know. There were some people who couldn't see them. I mean, which is absolutely amazing. I mean, I'd be saying to him, what color are they? He couldn't see a thing. And there were 20 other people, and we were all sitting with our jaws, our mouths wide open, just
right.
Dropping. And it's a lot to do with the tolerances of each one of our ability to visualize and see with on the border of, you know, we have a visual capacity within various spectrums of light. And, you know, as soon as you drop below a certain vibration into the sub-electromagnetic field, maybe some of us are more sensitive, or the craft allow us to access it and don't let others access vibrations, so you can actually see what is going on. Because the whole UFO topic is very, very deep and very complicated and not straightforward, and it challenges the nature of reality itself.
Yes. Well, do you believe that these are from another dimension?
I think a lot of what we are talking about, in fact, when you hear of the Space Brothers and various other entities visiting us, I'm sure many are from different worlds, I have no doubt. But in humble opinion, I tend to lean to the fact that many of these beings are interdimensional from reality. I mean, it's the question of reality. It's about us, you know, what are we? You know, where is our spirit matrix? It's not certainly not here.
Right.
Our minds are half, but our bodies are here, but we're actually not here. If you understand, we're feeding. We're only fed our matrix, our spiritual, as religious people might call it, the soul. Aware of what is around here through our senses. We're fed by the sense of touch, by the sense of sight, by the sense of sound that we are experiencing. The mind, soul matrix, is experiencing the physicality. In fact, we are probably not physical at all.
Right. Well, like we've heard the thing about we're not a physical body experiencing spirituality. We're a spiritual being experiencing the physicality.
Yes.
I believe that. I read once in a book that a contactee she was very religious, as in Christian, and she had been taken on board. She was back and she was feeling much better about things because evidently she'd been terrified, and she asked one of these beings, "Well, what about God?" And they said, I mean, like we know, they don't necessarily speak in words, but you know what they're saying. And this being said, "Well, God's the same for us as for you." And she felt very comforted because that would be just a whole, you know, and the connection was there. And that made her, I mean, and maybe it was just something that would help her, but it definitely did.
It's quite the law of one, you know, it just reminds me. Rukert, the law of one. We are all one, ultimately.
Yeah, exactly. We're all interconnected. Right.
Yes.
I want to ask the word, Exopolitics. What's the definition?
Okay. Exopolitics, if you like, it has perhaps three meanings. Meanings, it's a scientific discipline that involves education, exopolitical research, and government policy. It focuses on the people, the actors, the key institutions, and the political processes, and deals with the implications of extraterrestrial life, the implications for the people of this planet. It is also, in another way, exopolitics is also a movement that also deals with the implications of extraterrestrial life, but it involves activism, education, like our Exopolitics Institute. We have educational courses. We have a certification program. And it also facilitates the change of paradigm. So, for example, we bring in new paradigms like exoconsciousness, consciousness outside of our own consciousness, non-locality, the paradigm of interstellar civilizations, interdimensional civilizations, and, of course, new technologies. So that is, you know, a pretty broad spectrum explanation of what exopolitics is. But exopolitics, as opposed to ufology, ufology really has always dealt with the quantitative aspects of the ET issue. In other words, the physical evidence. Whereas ufology has always dealt with that, but with exopolitics, we bring in the quantitative side. For example, we can discuss the issues using witness testimony. I mean, after all, our legal system is based on witness testimony. People can go to jail for murder, the body, there's no evidence. But based on testimony, we can still come to a conclusion. So that is really what exopolitics is about.
Okay, then exopolitics is more of an umbrella. I mean, there's so much more involved in it than just ufology, because you're talking about the whole scientific discipline, the yeah. movement, and changing the paradigm. So a lot of that isn't covered by ufology. But ufology is, I mean, they're connected. And a lot of the people who are doing one or doing the other, I would assume.
Yeah, but I think exopolitics subsumes ufology. So, for example, if we want to study contacts just using ufology, it's almost impossible because of the counterintelligence, because of the tampering with evidence, because of the disinformation. But under exopolitics, we can have, you know, pretty strong interdisciplinary processes. By bringing in paleoanthropologists, psychologists, exobiologists, we can bring in a whole spectrum of expertise and you know, examine mm-hmm. through these multitude of disciplines.
Right. Well, I did read that the word was either used or discussed or coined in 1977 by Timothy Leary. Is that true?
Was that, sorry, you read what?
That the word exopolitics was discussed or used by Timothy Leary?
No,
that's not true. Where did the word come from, and when, and how did you get involved in this?
The word really came from Alfred and Dr. Michael Sala. You might say Dr. Michael Sala expanded the implications, the mechanics of the word after Alfred Weber, you know, manufactured the word. Mm-hmm. Exopolitics Institute was founded in 2005, and then I basically, you know, joined the Exopolitics Certification Program because I was, you know, having all these experiences, and nobody could tell me, you know, too much about why I had this incredible longing and this incredible need to understand aspects of exoconsciousness. Mm-hmm. And the Exopolitics Institute certification program and studying under Paula Harris and the Sala, Emmanuel Lameroy, the experts in the field, I became the first, I think, to get the Exopolitics diploma. And, you know, being an activist, been able to expand my work and my filmmaking, Dr. Sala invited me to the board of directors. where we today we have about 70 advisors meetings all around the world in this institute. So we have a forum and we share information.
That's wonderful. If somebody wanted to get involved a little deeper, what would be the thing for them to do? If they want to learn some of the things that you've compiled now?
I think the essential process that the planet needs to get involved, to contact the Exopolitics Institute, which is basically www.exopoliticsinstitute.org, contact Dr. Sala, contact myself, contact Paula Harris, and sign up the website about the Exopolitics Certification Program, because it can be done online. We've had doctors, we've had lawyers, we've had professional people, we've had white-collar people, blue-collar people, just people from all walks of life, doesn't matter, because this is a learning process. It's very, very important. The more people that become, you know, certified, so there will be a snowball effect on humanity. I have no doubt about it.
Right. So was this when you first started speaking out in 2005? Have you been talking about it and making videos and writing about it before that?
Before that, I became a little bit, you know, people thought, you know, in social groups, of course, up until that point, that this guy's a little bit nutty or whatever, because I was having particularly shy talking about them, you know, because if you see something, you see it. I mean, and 20 people see it, 20 people see it. I mean, what can you do?
Exactly, yeah.
We'll talk about it. You know, it's not the right place to talk about it when you, I mean, I'm not religious, but not at all. But, you know, people are.
Right.
And you talk in front of them, the eyes to it. And anyway, it caused me and the family problems because even at that point, in 2005, my wife hadn't seen anything. It was all based on my word. And until in 2007, we're all on the balcony of our apartment when this huge ship just flew right past everybody. And we had guests for dinner, we had everything, and everybody saw it. It wasn't very far away either, and it was huge. A battleship.
Wow.
But he saw it. And the next thing is a circle round came again and you could see straight through it. So that just made it very, very clear to everybody that we're not dealing with, you know, with a blimp or a jumbo jet or even a battleship on a parachute.
Right.
You know, big plastic bag. I mean, they saw what they saw. And the one guy is a senior partner in one of the world's largest accounting firms. And he's never been the same since.
Okay. Oh, wow, I'm so glad. Girl dinner party, everybody saw it, particularly your wife, because she needed to see for herself.
Yes, I mean, from that day onwards, everything changed and the sightings increased, I mean, really exponentially.
Yeah.
But we've had a lot of experience in Hong Kong. I mean, it's, you know, some of them, I mean, I can talk about, but some of them people would still think I was nuts.
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, there's so many people, but that's like the people who don't see for whatever possible psychological reasons. They really, they're just, it's scary, I guess. They're not comfortable with it. They're afraid. And so if they can deny it, it doesn't happen. They just don't want to hear it.
John Mack always spoke about, the late Harvard professor John Mack, always spoke about what they called ontological shock. You know, ontological shock. In other words, a shock to the view. Because he spoke about the politics of ontology, where few elites really detect reality through the world view, you know, through the religious institutions, educational, financial, military, political, control, the intelligence services, etc. People are conditioned. You know, they detect, you know, there's nothing else, it's just oil. That's mm-hmm. where you've got no such thing as they're swamp gas. They dictate it, and people are in their comfort zone. We're linked to this financial system, this way of living, and we can't. Many people cannot look outside of those tram lines because it affects their way of life. They focus on their two rails, and that's the way of thing.
Yeah, I mean they're very narrow in their vision.
Very.
And so, I mean, they're definitely ones that are in the box. And, you know, we're out there saying, what box? It's like, you know, it's all open, boundaryless.
Yes.
We're just beginning to learn some things. So this organization or institute sounds wonderful, really. Tell me about disclosure. Do you want to give a definition, sort of disclosure?
Well, disclosure, you know, really would be the official disclosure would be, as Steve Bassett calls it, with capital D, would be the acknowledgement by government of the reality of the extraterrestrial presence engaging this planet. That's the official disclosure. And that only takes one point. Disclosure means that a president or a senior in the military would get up on TV and say, ladies and gentlemen, the extraterrestrial is real, in reality is real, alone. Finished. That's it.
Right. And it must come from a government, though. I agree. Yeah, because, I mean, no matter how many other people you have involved, at this point, we still need that government person to say, hey, yeah, this is it.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
This
may not be a fair question at all, but, I mean, you know, it's just like, in your estimation, how long do you think it'll take? When do you think we might get disclosure? I mean, I knew that there were people, in fact, you and I have talked before about Coast to Coast AM, and I remember before Obama became president and when he was chosen, there were people saying, well, maybe this president, maybe this will be the one, and it doesn't look that way. When do you think?
Well, it's not a question of when I think, it's a question of the intelligence of the people to understand that disclosures already happened.
Yeah.
Nobody has stood up from the government and said exactly those words that I just said to you.
Yeah.
And that will never happen. That will never happen. Because the only time that will happen, that an official from the government will stand up and say it, is if the ETs allowed it. In other words, the ETs made it so unbearable that there was no other option, because they have too much, the people who control the world, the cabal, the elitists, the people who control Obama and control the governments, those people are the people who don't want this out, because it affects a trillion gazillion oil industry out there. And they don't want that to happen. It also has billions of minds and religion. And those religious organizations, Mullahs, they certainly wouldn't want that. And of course, it would create a stock market crash. It would devastate.
Beyond a doubt, it would really impact. I mean, and some people would totally lose their minds. I believe. I think some religious people might. But what do we do? I mean, you know, we can't not because of them, but you think the ETs themselves don't want it to be disclosed yet?
The ETs, first of all, did approach the governments at various times, Eisenhower, etc., offering spirituality and ways to develop the world for the good of all, but it was turned down in favor of less progressive bills for technology exchange, which they went to militarize and weaponize and give control in this this service to self world that we live in. So, in actual fact, then was the ETs decided they would go to the people, and that's what's been happening since then to now. We perhaps don't recognize it, but there's been a tremendous surge in the amount of people who have taken this topic on board. It's part of their life, becoming part of their paradigm. It is spreading like mad. The blog sphere is spreading like mad. YouTube is spreading it like mad. Mm. You know, Facebook, magazines, films, the release of UFO files from governments. It has really opened up this Pandora's box. So the disclosure, and the best way for it to happen, and this is the way I believe the ET wanted, is from the people upward. because once this awareness percolates from the bottom up, the flip at the top, i.e. the elites, will bubble over out of the box and fall down and dissolve away. You can't do it the other way around. The people upwards. We are the people that have to make the change, the so-called 99%. I mean, how can 99% people be controlled by 1% of the people? You know, it's inherently
we've
wrong with
it. We've been very complacent and we've gone along with it, but yeah, things are changing.
People are going to change their paradigm. It's a paradigm shift. And yeah. It's coming. It really is coming. So I can't give you a date for the government because the date is when ETs want it. Because they know we're not 100% ready right now.
Well,
I mean, we need to interact to some extent. Well,
that's it. I mean, I've read quite a bit about different areas and where there's been sightings over the southwest part of Puerto Rico, where we evidently have a military base, but they say there's been an abnormal amount of sightings, and some people have speculated that there is contact there for one place. I don't know. I also read something quite a while back about in our crazy Wild West. It was in 18-something. You know, the newspaper came out maybe once a week or once a month or something. And there was actually an article about some small body being found.
Yeah.
And in that, they just said, he is not of this world. And they just went right on. Like, I mean, they didn't make a big deal about it. But if that is true, I mean, we've been having... Admittedly, that wasn't the kind of contact we wanted because he was dead. But, I mean, they've been coming around. Well, they say we have stories in all of our histories for thousands and thousands of years. And then if you believe that they were here and helped with the pyramids and things, well, you know, it takes it to a whole different level.
It does. But
do you think they were here before? I mean, way, way, way back?
Well, first of all, I have no doubt in my mind we are a bicameral species. We are half alien, half human. We were genetically engineered. Whether you want to bring precision theory or not is another matter. It doesn't really matter. But we are engineered. We have the DNA of many, many, many alien species. So they created us. We were created in their image. In other words, we were created by humans. Look, you can tease probably with a dash of, you know, other strange-looking characters too. You can look on the cave walls. You'll see ancient glyphs of ancient humanoids painting pictures of crafts, spacemen. This has been going hundreds of thousands of years. In fact, Dr. Michael Cremo, you can show you artifacts. He says every museum has two doors. Going back millions. I mean, you know, time is infinite. You know, why does it start now? I mean, there must have been thousands of civilizations that have come and gone, destroyed themselves. Some of the extraterrestrials may have been the survivors of some of those human civilizations that were destroyed and perhaps survived. So just, as I say, interdimensional or from other worlds, other planets, other galaxies. Yeah, they, you know, Sergeant Stone from Crash Retrieval talks about over 50 species currently engaging the planet. I mean, that's 50 species they've interacted with. They know it.
Isn't that amazing?
We just afflicted, you know, coming up along the way, we'll join the galactic neighborhood, and off we'll go. And then we'll get the lunatic out of the...
Well, what about the... I agreed so many things that come together, and then, of course, some just cancel out the others, but... You know, you mentioned the galactic system and our very own moon. You know, there's a lot of people who have seen pictures, and sure enough, it does look like buildings on the backside of the moon. You know, that there's a lot of that going on, and I've read from a couple sources that they think that the moon was placed there 13,000 years ago. Today, I just saw something. I didn't read the article. I saw a headline about the moon possibly being hollow. There's so many things, you know, and then there's still people on this planet right now that think that we didn't go to the moon.
Well, I'm sure we did go to the moon.
I think so, too. I mean, I would bet on that one, yeah.
Mind about that.
Yeah. Well, in fact, some of our astronauts from way back the beginning, they have talked about ETs or alien beings, whatever. I mean, some of them are very sure of it. And at this point, they're not hiding their feelings. I mean, they're getting pretty old, and, you know, they're just saying it like they saw it. And I thought that was interesting.
Well, Dr. Mitchell really is not shy in coming forward. Sixth man on the moon.
Yeah.
It tells you as it is. Neil Armstrong alluded to it. Buzz Aldrin talks about it.
Yeah.
But we mustn't forget. We really mustn't forget that people like George Adamski, the contactee from the 50s, was taken by the ETs. He saw the backside of the moon. His case, extremely verifiable. The evidence is all out there. You know, he's described certain phenomena before the astronauts described, twinkling lights outside the windows of the craft, et cetera, et cetera. There's no doubt about the case of George Adamski. In fact, this is a very, very important contactee's story, and it really does talk a lot about what's on the backside of the moon, what the moon is about.
Yeah.
And it's also a very strange thing that when you have a solar eclipse, the moon seems to fit exactly the same dimensions as the sun. And the fact that the one moon is always facing you every time it goes round and round. I mean, I think it's an essential component for allowing life to evolve on this planet. Perhaps there's some hyperdimensional physics reason for this. So, yeah, and it is hollow, apparently. They've done certain tests on the moon where they've made types of vibrations, and they've heard this ring, which indicates some sort of hollowness, and they were talking about the dust of two nations on the moon. So I can't tell if it was brought in there or what, but certainly there's, we really need to be told a lot more than we know. And we even know that from the Disclosure Project, Sergeant Carl Wolf witnessed the sanitization of pictures of what's on the moon.
Yeah, that's... I don't know. I really hate the idea
that they think
we can't understand. You know, we shouldn't know. It's too dangerous for us to know.
But I think there's bases on the moon already, human bases. I'm in doubt about that. I have no evidence of such, but it makes sense. The you know, you talk about these UFO sightings in Puerto Rico. It's quite difficult to know which are ours and which are theirs, because the military-industrial complex is probably 50 years ahead of us in technology.
Exactly. That was my other thing, because I've heard people with their objections as to all these craft being from elsewhere, that, you know, they say, well, no, I don't think anything's from out there. I think it's all from here. And it's true that our military, like you said, at least 50 years, they're doing things that we won't know about till 50 years. I mean, they're way ahead, but I don't think they're all that far ahead.
They also have technology transfer programs. I mean, the case of Charles Hall, the meteorologist who worked at Nellis Air Force Base in the 60s. He's written 5 books, Millennium Hospitality, where he interacted with the tall whites, perhaps the very same ETs that were there during the days when the cowboys used to see them. In the same area. They lived 800 years old. They talked about seeing the scout craft, the craft, the generals interacting with the tall whites, bringing them clothing for their children. There are hundreds of them as guests of the U.S. government. So, yes, there's technology transfer programs. Clifford Stone attests to the fact that some of these crashes are craft that they go to are back engineered. Dave Adair, the scientist, the rocket scientist, witnessed these bias and crashes. They change color according to your mood when you touch them. I mean, there's so much out there. They must be way, way advanced.
Yeah. That's I don't know what to say about it. But I did want to mention one thing. You had said that your wife saw the ship, and you have a son who had an experience.
Yeah. My eldest son. when he was 4 years old, he came to me once, and he was, this is when we were living in England. He said to me, "Dad, these little guys came to my room, they were wearing robes, and they floated me down the stairs, took me into the garden with this white light." Now, at 4 years old, I'd never mentioned anything to him at that stage. These are the same guys that I was with. So,
wow.
YouTube, you put his name in, Jake Gould. His friends, you know, 2-3 years ago, used to laugh at him about all the experiences. And he went on holiday to Amsterdam, and he said to them, "You know, I'm sure we'll get you to see a ship." And he was like doing fire protocols. And before you know what happened, it appeared in the sky in Amsterdam in front of his friends. And he filmed it, YouTube. See, he put his name in. And when I took the film, analyzed the film and inverted the colors, I noticed there were two craft, one you could see and one you couldn't see in the visible spectrum. And I showed that at the end of the film. So you can see both craft flying around. So anyway, they've had lots and lots, and my kids, my daughter as well, I took her to the States a couple of years ago, and it was a craft a day.
So now it's like, okay, the family has seen, so you're no longer crazy dad. But you, now, I don't know if this has anything to do with your business, but you are very active in alternative energy also.
I'm extremely active in the alternative energy. I have a German partner who's an electrical engineer. And the strange thing about this gentleman was that some years back, we happened to meet, we didn't say much to each other, and we got talking, sort of conversation unraveled. And he mentioned, because he'd heard that I was involved with UFOs, he said, "You know, I can't tell anybody this, but I think I can tell you." And I said, "Well, what's that?" He said, "I was in, you know, Cologne, back from my university one night, and I'm walking home, and all of a sudden I looked up," and he sort of stopped, and he decided whether he wanted to tell me or not again. And there was this football-sized craft on his head that glided, and he was watching this thing for like 9 minutes, and then it just went zip and blinked out. And this troubled the poor guy for years and years and years because he couldn't tell anybody. I mean, here's a guy, he's an electrical engineer. He's involved in the physics of electricity. How can he talk about it?
Right.
He realized I was interested in this, the aspects of energy from water, you know, hydrogen being the most abundant element in the universe kind of thing. And what we got together, and we've 3 years of research, and we have a solution, you know, for cars to save a lot of money on fuel. We have a solution, and for generators and trucks, and we'll release this in 3 months.
Well, so now, are you afraid of making that public? Because I've heard so much about people who came up with something that would work, whether on smaller things or larger, like you're talking, and they were just pretty much disappeared, or somebody came in and said, "Oh, we'll help you pay and get it patented," and then it was never heard of again. Are you afraid that somebody's going to try to do something with what you guys have come up with?
Well, the steps are yes and no. First of all, we funded it ourselves, entirely ourselves. We're fortunate enough to have. So we don't have third parties breathing down our neck. We're in a part of the world that might be a little difficult, not impossible, of course, to be interfered with. Third of all, I don't believe we are making too much of a dent in our initial stage, because this is what we call the stepping stone technology to the free energy. We're perhaps saving 20 to 30% of the fuel. So whilst it's a growing, it's not an immediate threat. And I don't think we're going to be marketing this in a high profile manner.
Right.
Very much under radar, and people will to see it, and we'll perhaps license it to them if they want to produce in their country to help give jobs in different parts of the world. We'll go that route. It's the people upwards, and not the top down. I don't want to go in and do anything conventionally where you need this permission and that permission, because all these institutions, government bodies, whatever, you know, you show them you're cutting emissions, which this product does, you're saving fuel, oh, they'll say, oh, yeah, but it's this problem, it's that problem, it increases the CO2 and blah, blah, blah. They always find a reason not to do it.
Well, right, because they're bought and paid for by the great multi-corporations that are making money off of oil and other things. So they don't want something like that to come around. But, okay, if you keep it fairly low-key, then, yeah, you're right, it should be pretty much okay.
If it's any good, it'll grow itself.
Mm-hmm. On its own.
You know, it'll grow in its own.
Right. Tell me about crop circles. You think about those?
Well, they make you think.
They do.
What do I think of crop circles? I mean, it's something I've always had my eye on. It's something it resonates with me completely. I think the Doug and Dave scenario, you know, of course, Doug and Dave did the first few crop circles with their plank going around.
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay. And we've all seen pictures of those very crude ones, which, sure. But,
you know,
wonderfully, beautifully designed in sacred geometry and everything. And it was done in 2 hours, you know.
You know, the Arecibo crop circles, the Chilton crop circle. I mean, you see, you know, almost in 3D from looking from the sky downwards, you see
mm-hmm.
the disc.
Yeah.
The bind, you see it in 3D. I mean, you've got to think about this. I mean,
Somebody like a shadow or something, yeah.
Crop circle predicting the position of the planets. I mean, it takes some thinking, you know. I mean, I'm totally convinced that what we're looking at here is this whole aspect of the extraterrestrials who taking some responsibility for us, or maybe for their actions on us in the past, their genes, to raise our consciousness slowly mm-hmm. but surely, make you think. They embed all sorts of geometrical mathematical information in these pictograms that are stood and recognized by some people.
Yeah.
This is definitely a concerted effort on behalf of these, maybe celestials, maybe they're type 3 civilizations. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to know. Celestials would be perhaps type 4, type 5. But maybe type 3, you're Star Trekkies, these kind of guys that have reached the level of using the energy of galaxies. You know, that's advancement. Maybe they're the people out there, you know, the Arcturians and the Andromedans. These are sort of quite active helper ETs, perhaps watcher ETs, classified as watchers and helpers. And they're there helping raise the consciousness of humanity. I mean, we are being mentored. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the space people, the space brothers. There's a lot of mentoring going on. Still is going.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you something. I don't think I've ever told anybody. I'm actually making a series of wall hangings of the designs of some of the crop circles because I'm totally enamored of them. I think that they're wonderful with so much to tell us. And so that's one of my spare time things.
I mean, that would be amazing. You could do really market those sort of...
Yeah, probably. Yeah, maybe I should think about that. I wanted to ask you about the Space Preservation Treaty, Neil. What is that?
Well, I mean, Carol Rosen's treaty. It's all revolving around, you know, don't weaponize space. Space is all weaponized. I mean, most of these Western countries have these space platforms out there. You know, some of them are basically to protect one country against the other, but some of these weapon systems are pointing out towards space. In other words, pointing out towards some of these craft. They're able to fire these electromagnetic weapons or these scalar weapons, let's call them, at craft to keep them away. So the law goes. I think what the world wants, what the people, the activists are trying to do is to get all that stuff out of space, focus on our problems back home and ourselves out, and perhaps try and make ourselves a civilization so we can interact with extraterrestrials, as opposed to showing them that we're a bunch of warmongers pointing weapons both at us and at them.
Right. Isn't that horrible? I mean, why would they want to
space.
Really have much to do with us if we're already on the attack. That's horrible. But you say that several countries have the weapons out there pointing away, not just the United States.
Hello?
Oh, okay, there you are. You said that several countries have the weapons pointed out into space, not just the U.S.? Hello? Neil?
Hello, I'm here.
Okay, you're there now? Okay. Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, just we got cut off, I think.
Oh, okay. You're saying that the United States isn't the only country that has weapons pointed out into space, then?
Not the only country. You have most of the European space agencies. All these space agencies are all working together all around the world.
Yeah.
It's the Indian, the Japanese, British. This all comes under the management of the extraterrestrial presence. You see, nobody can fly. Look, India goes to the moon. Japan goes to the moon. They all see what's on the moon, but they keep quiet. It's a controlled, orchestrated group that gives permission to fly. China fly into space. But if they fly into space, they've got to shut up. They've got to keep quiet. They have their weapons platforms out there. They have everything. United States military could shoot and get rid of anybody in 5 seconds with their advanced weapons.
But in the meantime, everybody's locked into this keep quiet kind of thing.
Hello, but, I think we've lost you again.
Ah, okay, now, can you hear me? Well, are you there now?
Hello.
Okay. I hear you.
Hello?
Yes, well, I did hear you. Do you hear me at all? Neil?
Hello?
Oh, we've only got 7 minutes left. Okay, I guess that's it. Neil?
Hello?
There, can you hear me now?
Yep, what's happening there? I don't know, we seem to be
coming. I don't know, but like I said, we've only got like 7 minutes. So what do you think, like world overview of all of this? Are you there in Hong Kong? Do you have, well, I'm sure you have contacts around the world, but I mean, are you getting feedback from a lot of people around or more concentrated with Hong Kong or United States or what?
I get an overall feedback from all around the world, being in the institutes. We have many members from all around the world.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
So we get constant feedback. And the sightings are on the increase all the time.
Okay. Are the sightings on the increase? I believe they are. But are they on the increase really? Or is it just that people feel freer to talk about seeing them? Or do you think that it's just people are seeing them more? Like we talked before, you know, maybe... I heard that the Indians that were in my country when Columbus came over, some of them didn't see the ship because it was so out of the realm of their imagination. So is it just that people are opening up more and seeing them more? And I've lost him again. Skype was so good to us for 50 minutes, plus when we talked ahead. But there, is that you? Okay, we will be having Neil back on. Go to his site at www.exopolitics, that's exopolitics, hongkong.hk. And, okay, yes, he just said he seems cut off.
Okay. Hello?
There you are. I was just giving the information. And at that website, you can find out about Close Encounters of the ADH Kind also, which Neil wrote. If you go to YouTube, just type in Neil, N-E-I-L, Gould, G-O-U-L-D. He's got a lot on there. You want to see what his son put up? That's Jake, J-A-K-E, Gould. I'm trying to, is there anything else right there? Okay. Oh, and also, go to www.exopoliticsinstitute.org, where you can find out more about taking a course and learning as people around the world are doing. So we're going to say goodbye now, and we'll have Neil on again. So thank you so much for coming on. Hello? Okay, we'll...
Hello?
Wait on that one.
Hello?
Ah, you're back. Okay.
You're back. I don't know what's happening, but somebody doesn't want us to talk.
Okay, yeah. We've only got a couple minutes, and I gave all the information from your YouTube videos, which you have a lot of, to Jake's, to the two websites for the Institute and yours.
Right.
And... if anybody has questions, Neil is on Facebook. You could just send him a question or send one to me, or amrkfeo@yahoo.com, or on Facebook. Just PM me. And the next time he comes on, we will answer those questions. So, because definitely he has a lot to say. So, Neil, I don't know what to say, but thank you so much for coming on.
You're more than welcome.
And you have a nice weekend on your boat slash ship with those, I was going to say felines because I've got felines, with your canines and your family. And the dogs were wonderful. They didn't bark once. So, hey, it's all good.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Thank
really
you.
Enjoyed it.
Okay, we're going to go out with a little music from Hamlet Hall.
Okay.
Bye.
Hi.
And we are back with Feed Your Head. You just heard Neil Gould from Hong Kong, and now we have Ariel Montserrat from Tennessee, USA. Hi, Ariel.
Hi, Roseanne. Hi, everybody.
Happy Equinox.
Happy Equinox to you, too.
Yes. And if people don't understand that, and it's amazing to me, but I keep finding, you know, when every equinox comes around, there's adults who don't know what that means.
There's a what?
Adults who don't know what that means.
Oh.
I mean, I studied it in school, but of course I'm older than God, so I guess that's what we had in school back then. But I don't know. Anyway, it means that the daylight and the darkness the same. It happens this time in September and March every year. And now we're really going into the dark. So you're going to have more dark than daylight.
Mm-hmm.
So we celebrate this. And like, okay, it's all good. Before we start, I have something. You probably heard this today. Romney, you know, the foot in the mouth, lying piece of whatever.
Oh, yeah.
One of his lies, and he said Palestinians have no interest whatsoever in establishing peace.
Mm-hmm.
The pathway to peace is almost unthinkable to accomplish. And, you know, it was funny, when I saw this, it was the same time I was invited to this page on Facebook that says Palestinians love Israelis, and it's all about establishing the bound, the connection.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we know, because he's with the dominionists, which is what you're going to talk about, the Christian dominionists,
mm-hmm.
who want war because of some perverted, convoluted idea that they can bring on Armageddon.
Mm-hmm. And they, a lot of them believe that we will not have Armageddon until they've done certain things on Earth. You know,
right.
That Jesus won't come back until we've cleaned up our act, basically.
Right, until we've killed millions more people.
Yeah.
This is their thing. Isn't that disgusting? I can't wrap my head around that type of thing. I do want to say Ariel is the editor of the Green Egg.
And publisher.
And yeah, my goodness. And writer.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps her busy down there in Tennessee. And she also has a radio show. You want to tell us about the magazine and the radio show?
Oh, well, the magazine is Green Egg, and it was first started in 1968 by Oberon Zell Ravenheart. And it closed its doors once, and I can't remember when that was, I think the late 70s, due to lack of funds. And then reopened again, I think in the late 80s it was. And it's won awards, and I've been the managing editor and publisher for the last, almost 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're strictly online. We can find us at Green Egg Zine, like magazine, Z-I-N-E, .com.
All right, and you will get things there that you have never gotten. Full of variety.
Mm-hmm.
Does that work? The first time, I mean, I'll never forget, it's either my first Green Egg or real close to it, a friend who was in my group brought it in, and he said, okay, you need to read this. And it was the article, Maureen Glorizel, who was one of Oberon's wives, his main partner, she had written about safe sex. And it had the condom contract in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, what? Who are these people? I at the time, I didn't realize that I would be family one of these days in the future. Okay. This is very interesting, though.
They're never dull.
When I think about the days way back in my first exposure or experience, it's like, okay, condom contract.
Well, hey, it works.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that anybody close to them has ever gotten anything. So
that's what I was gonna say. Well, I mean, I've never been pregnant. I've never, I had an issue from maybe before, but not have. No, it's it works.
Yeah. Well, they're not dull. I lived with them for a year, and it was really one of the most interesting years of my life. I do have to say that.
You have to,
Green Egg for me actually started back in 1999, shortly after I moved in with them. And Oberon was the only person up to that point that had ever encouraged me to write. And one day he shows up, and my totem, one of my several totems, and the one that was most powerful at that time, was the wolf. And he shows up, he comes back home one day, and he has this little, you know, like those plastic Easter eggs?
Right, yeah.
And it's a bright Kelly green, and you push a button, it opens up, and there's a little wolf inside, a little wolf family inside.
Oh, the whole family, okay.
And many, many years later, that was 1999, years later, fast forward to 2007, is when my husband Tom and I decided to resurrect for the third time Green Egg, and we pledged that this would be the last time it would have to resurrect, that it would just keep going. And anyway, when I was unpacking from moving and came across this little green egg, and I thought, well, that's where it started. It started back in 1999. It was like such a, you know, what a wonderful, wonderfully magical symbolism. So anyway, that's Green Egg. We have a circulation of almost 250,000 around the world. We put out issues, well, we try to get out issues 4 times a year. Sometimes we can't always do that because there's only a couple of us working here. So anyway, but yeah, we try to have a big variety. And if you're interested in submitting any work, just go to our website, greeneggzine.com.
Right, and you will have requirements and things. And it's, I mean, you know, hey, who wouldn't want to write for a magazine that's got 250,000 people reading it? And that's just people who are subscribed. So, you know, they read an article and, you know, call somebody from the other room in to read it. And it gets around. So I know that you do write and you edit what you also look for articles.
I'm always on the prowl for articles. We can't ever have too many articles. So
yeah, well, that's the nice thing about having it online. You really can. When you're working with hard copy, sometimes you know money is a factor, and you do have to keep it to so many pages.
Yeah, quite honestly, it just is a lot easier to do it online, and we can do more things. I mean, I looked into it, and to print up a book, because I wanted to do a yearly, like, compendium of all of the issues, make it hardbound. But yeah, it would cost $45, and then I'd have to tack something on, you know, to make a little bit of money.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, doing it online allows us to have artwork submitted by some really wonderful top-notch pagan artists, and we're adding artists all of the time, and we are mostly known for being cutting-edge innovative. That was what Oberon had in mind when he started it up. And we're not so much into basic paganism, but I think our magazine is such that even non-pagans might enjoy it. We have alternative science.
I was going to say that science is, because Church of All Worlds, which incidentally is the church that Oberon started, is based on a science fiction book.
Yeah.
So there's always been science involved.
Stranger in a Strange Land.
So, yeah, if this is not your everyday airy-fairy magazine, people, it really isn't.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't want it to be.
No. You couldn't do airy-fairy if you had to.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, because, you know, that's a compliment, but it's so true.
I'll put you on my Christmas card list now.
Well, I would hope so. And why don't you tell us about the radio show that you and Oberon do, which, again, is variety.
I'm sorry, what's that?
Tell us about the radio show that you and Oberon do, which is variety also.
Oh, right. It's called Over to Oberon and Ariel, and it's on Blog Talk Radio. It's on Pagans Tonight. If you go there, you'll find our archives of all the shows we've done since going back to a year ago, May. And it's under the auspices of Witch School International. And we're on every Wednesday night from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we interview all kinds of different people about all kinds of different things. We don't just stick to things that are only pagan. We
right.
interview people that might have something to say about an expert on some sort of environmental issue, or we had somebody from the Military Religious Freedom Foundation who was on, and that is a foundation that is struggling to maintain open religious practices in the military, and you know, to support people's rights, because
right. exactly.
the military's under siege right now from the Dominionists, particularly the Air Force, most especially at the Air Force Academy. And the guy that runs Military Religious Freedom Foundation has been nominated a number of times for the Peace Prize, and his statistics say that he has something like 26,000 cases at the time.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Well, 26,000 cases. And those are just from the Christians, like the evangelists. Those are just from the evangelists. The evangelists are getting attacked at the Air Force Academy by the Dominionists because they're not being Christian enough, I guess.
Oh, my God.
They have been beating them up. They have been, the top officers there have coerced people into going to Dominionist Christian activities and church things. It's mind-boggling.
Because we used to say, oh, those crazy, I mean, and I don't mean this nastily, but evangelical, but now they're being beat on by the Dominion.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the rise, when I talk about the rise of Christianity and Christian Dominionism, I'm not talking about your ordinary mainstream rank-and-file Christians, even evangelicals. Not talking about, you know, those are very tame compared to these new folks. And they're Dominionists. They're looking for, they're hoping to make America into a Christian, their brand of Christian theocracy.
Right, their brand, because they're one-wayers.
Right, they're one way, exactly. And so there are several sects under them, and it gets kind of confusing, you know. If you sit down and try to figure out, one day maybe I'll be able to make a chart, because it's all sort of interwoven like a sweater. It's hard to pick out each thread.
Mm.
But there are several groups that are attached to this Dominionist movement.
Well, you know how when you say Christian, then you have to say, okay, Catholic or Protestant. So is one of them Catholic, you said?
No, not specifically, but
okay.
The Catholics now have their own fundamentalists, Opus Dei.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Muslims have their fundamentalists. And, you know, there's the rise of fundamentalist religion going on right now. Anyway, they change their names often, and so that makes it even more confusing. But if you want to Google anything, Google Joshua's Army. You can Google the Third Wave. You can go, there's an excellent website called talktoaction.org, T-A-L-K, the number 2, action.org. And they've been tracking all of this for like 20 years, and they've got huge archives and lots of really, really interesting, really amazing information. And it is really amazing what's happening right now. Joshua's Army and like that, those are people who are literally training for a literal religious war here in America. Most people don't know this, okay, what I'm going to tell you. The New Apostolic Reformation is what a lot of these groups are under, but that's one of the really large groups that are Dominionists. New Apostolic Reformation. Remember that name, because when you read the news, it might pop up. And when it does, I want you to know about these people. Who are these people I'm talking about? Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, Rick Santorum, Rick Perry. There's a whole lot more. I just can't think of them right now.
Okay,
they're all caught up in this New Apostolic Reformation, Christian Dominionist Church. This is treason. To me, they want to overthrow democracy and create a theocracy. That's treason.
Right, and of course, those people, because we, all of the ones you mentioned have a cog missing. So
have a what?
A cog missing. I don't know.
Only
if it's,
one? No, I think more than that.
Well, I'm trying to be nice here, but like their humaneness gene is not there.
Yeah.
So, okay, New Apostolic Reformation. That I don't know. That just bugs me that I'm used to the word apostolic because where I grew up, there's the Apostolic Church and blah blah blah. And those people, they would no more take up arms
right.
than they'd just step out their house and fly.
Right, and that's why I think it's important to distinguish these extremists from
right.
the rest
so that,
of the mainstream.
Good. Yeah. To know that these are the crazies mm-hmm. because, Apostolic Christian Church, you hear that, and they usually, at least the ones I'm more familiar with, they would be the people that didn't wear a lot of makeup. The women may still have long hair. I mean, they're sort of along the Mennonite line. But very peaceful.
Yeah.
And so now we know the New Apostolic Reformation is anything but.
Right. Right.
That's hard.
It.
How did you get interested, Ariel? Because I know you've been studying this for a while.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to remember earlier this evening, because I thought you might ask me that question. I know that I've known about this for at least 2 years, maybe three. I don't know what happened. I don't remember.
Okay.
But something sparked my interest. I was reading. I spend several hours every day on the computer,
right.
my back allows, searching out news. And you have to search out news these days. You can't just flip on CNN or Fox or in MSNBC and get the news. What you're going to get is complete and total BS.
That's why I don't have TVs anymore. Yeah, it was because I'm one of those people. I would watch it if I had it probably, and it's like I don't need to watch the lies on the news, and I sure wouldn't. Well, I wouldn't be watching reality shows even if I had it. But I mean,
yeah.
It's just for me, it's better not to have.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it eats your brain or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
yeah.
not good for you. Anyhow, and so one thing led to another, and I finally ended up on the talktoaction.org site that I just mentioned, and wow, did I get an education. I started reading and reading and reading, and then I really got into it, and I started searching things out on Google and reading books and things like that. And one book that I really would recommend everybody to read is called The Family. The Family. It's by Jeff Charlet, Charlet, and he's not paying me any money, okay? The hype is book. But it's a brilliant expose of Christianity that's at the very heart of our government. But they don't believe, or like regular mainstream Christians, they don't even think like that. They believe that God appointed them personally to be in a great position of power because they were so humble.
Oh, okay. You may want to repeat that because you're kidding me.
No, they have, I know, it's like, I don't normally talk about this to people because unless it's people I really know, because, I might one day get carted away to a loony bin, but,
they're so humble, and they were chosen for this great position. They don't mind telling each other or assuming this, but they,
They have a phrase. Okay, the family has a house on C Street that a lot of the Congress people, congressmen. I don't know that, I don't think there's any women in that, but congressmen stay at. And it's a, you know, it's a Christian. You have to be a Christian person to be there. But they practice, like I say, an entirely different kind of Christianity. And they have a saying, it's called Jesus plus nothing. Nothing meaning that you can do whatever you want, but as long as you just attach Jesus' name to it, then it will be okay. And then, it, you know, then it's blessed by God and will succeed. I mean, it's nuts. It's absolutely lunatic.
It's one of those, well, in the name of Jesus. Whatever they do is in the name of Jesus.
Exactly.
Well, what did you say the phrase is? Jesus what?
Jesus plus nothing. The nothing
plus
being
nothing?
Like fill in the blank.
Ah. Oh, my
yeah.
goodness.
Well-known congressmen and senators have stayed there and continue to stay there. And it's really, it's amazing the amount of power that they wield. And that's why I recommend everybody to read this book, because it would take a lot more than an hour for me to explain to you how interwoven they are at the very heart of the decision makers.
It's another old boys network.
Mm-hmm. Very much. Yeah. Yeah. It's frightening. But we need to know about this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. Yeah.
Because for too long in this country, we've had our head up our ass or buried or however you want to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, most of us. And I include mm-hmm. myself there. And you know, once you start seeing things,
mm-hmm.
so much starts making sense.
Yeah.
I mean the connections, because you start to see how that benefits so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
Or if something happens, you go back to, okay, who's going to benefit from this? Basically follow the money.
Exactly.
Or the power stream.
Right, right. I mean, truly, it's like something out of a science fiction nightmare, it's just insane. It's really insane. That's why I say I don't normally talk to people about this stuff, because I know way too much about what's going on to know that really, you know, it's like it's not that there's one person or one group in power. There's a lot of infighting and different groups jockeying for power, you know.
Yeah.
And this one, the members of the family tend to be very much entrenched in their weirdo Christian beliefs.
Right. So,
yeah.
So these, the family, the book is about the congressmen, you say it's men as far as you know, that stay at this house when they're in town, or at least part of the time when they're in town. That
Ruthann,
is the family.
Ruthann, can you talk maybe a little bit closer to the phone? I'm having trouble hearing you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Now can you hear me?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, okay. No, so you said that this is men, not women, and these,
right.
the family,
mm-hmm.
it's the guys, the congressmen,
mm-hmm.
that stay at this house on C Street in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
when they're in town,
mm-hmm.
or if they have a house in town with their wives, they still frequent C Street.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm. Exactly, yeah.
As long as you say, Jesus.
Yeah, then you're okay.
These
groups, the whole movement, Dominionist movement, started, it had been going on for quite a while. I mean, go back to the 30s. Some guy from Scandinavia, Abraham Verikoff or something, shows up, and he's the one that came up with his original idea of pitching this to the powers that be, that, hey, you're here because you were ordained by God to be so. And it worked, and they took him into their fold, and the guy made tons of money, and he became their spiritual advisor, you know, and then he passed the mantle on, and finally it ended up with its current leader of the family, Doug Coe, C-O-E, and he's the spiritual advisor to these guys. I forget where I was going.
Well, I'd say he's probably not doing a very good job if you look at him.
Yeah.
But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, he's got a lot on his plate. Oh, I know her. Anyway, in 1971 is when they really first got on the public scene. And they came up with a strategy And the first step was to infiltrate the schools in America. And if you were paying attention, if you were alive and paying attention in 1971, you would have noticed that all of a sudden there was this subtle leaning towards religion in schools. And more extremist right Christians. And it kept going. And they branched out into other areas. And they came up with something called the Seven Mountain Strategy. And there's even a website about it, sevenmountainstrategy.com.
Is seven spelled out or the number?
Oh, it's the number, sorry. It's the number.
Sevenmountainstrategy.com. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the seven mountains are seven areas. And they have a plan to take over each of these areas, and it pretty well encompasses every facet of our society. The first one is religion. The second is family, and then education, government, media, arts and entertainment, and business. All right, let's look at religion. When we think about the last 15 years, you can see that more and more they have been They've been teaching the Bible in a lot of public grammar schools in the South.
Yeah, which again is against the law.
Yeah, they're encroaching more and more and more really on freedom of religion. And the family is extremely important to them, to the point where, of course, they're not only against abortion but obviously birth control, education, and that's where they started, like I just said. Government, they have infiltrated the government to the very top. Well, we had George W. Bush was part of the, what the heck was he? He was part of the Dominionists anyway.
Yeah.
And media...
It's bought and paid for in this country. I mean,
yeah,
there's no doubt. Yeah.
There's an extremely wealthy man named Howard Amundsen, and he is a super-duper-duper religious fanatic. And he's one of these, and there's a number of them that work behind the scenes. The people that started Amway, that's another one. Hobby Lobby, that's another. They're in the news right now today.
Amway, Rich DeVos?
The what now?
Rich DeVos was one of the Amway people. I can't think of the other guy.
Yes, Betsy DeVos. Yeah, yeah. I can't think of his name either. Yeah. Anyhow, but they're taking over business, and we got Rupert Fox taking over the media. You know, and what's weird about that is he's with all these uber Christians, but he also has companies that make pornography or show pornography. It's really weird.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think this just came to me? But I think probably, don't you agree? Maybe that pornography is another way to dumb down.
Probably.
So in that case, and even if they don't like that, I mean, they really want to keep people dumbed down.
Mhm.
And so big time sports, pornography, mm-hmm. stupid mm-hmm. shows like reality shows on TV.
Yeah. They're the worst.
Yeah, well, they'll just say Jesus and go ahead and sponsor it. But, yeah, because those keep people in that mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's the other part of it, that they, you know, science is something evil.
No, but I mean, kids are not encouraged at all now. To study sciences. I wish I would have studied more. I mean, I'm just fascinated by it now, but they're not encouraged. I mean, if for a kid to do that, it has to be something they really want.
Mm-hmm.
For them to go ahead into some school they can get into and study more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these are the people who believe that people have only been on the earth for what,
4 or 5,000 years.
Right,
so,
exactly. Exactly.
You know, I mean, talk about non-scientific. I mean, what the hell?
Well, okay, here's things like this. That brings to mind the Creationist Museum in Kentucky. And it has displays of children playing on, you know, riding on dinosaurs' backs and playing with the, you know, dinosaurs and everything. And this is funded by the taxpayers.
Really? Now, see, that kind of shit is,
yeah.
There is no excuse for that.
Yeah.
Let me just
read off a couple of the titles of articles on the sevenmountainstrategy.com site, okay? This is a Christian site. This is not a site that explores any of this, okay? So this is straight from the horse's mouth. Here's one. Why political activism in the pulpit is part of the gospel of the kingdom. Okay, right there, if I worked for the IRS, I should report them, and they would lose their 501c3 standing.
Well,
in
they should.
Church.
Yeah.
They should. They should.
Because
why aren't they?
God, we need so much. We need separation of church and state. And something like that. Yeah, because that's one of your 501c3 rules. You cannot go around
speaking
for. You can say, oh, go vote next Tuesday. But you can't say... anything about who to vote for.
You specifically cannot do political activism from the pulpit.
Right.
Here's another one. The origin and dangers of the wall of separation between church and state. Here they're saying that the wall of separation between church and state is dangerous.
Yeah.
Okay.
They've got to go backwards because they're backwards.
They don't have to make sense. This is a faith-based, intellectual pursuit.
Because that's evil, actually, probably, for them.
Uh-huh.
For somebody to actually use their brain.
That's all I've got for now for headlines. What I'm just trying to give you an idea of what these people are doing. It's just so absolutely outrageous. You can barely believe it.
Well, yeah, for a thinking person to, like, read that drivel, then you have to go and puke. Really, it's the kind, okay, don't eat before. I keep finding more and more of those online. Sites to go to, but it's like, don't eat before.
Be
ready to take some real good exercise or something afterwards because, you know, your brain is going to be doing strange things.
I felt after I finished reading The Family, I felt like I needed to go take a shower. I really did.
Yeah.
It was just horrible. I mean, I really think our country's reaching a breaking point very soon. I think very soon things are going to change big time. I have no idea what they're going to look like, but, you know, anybody who has studied systems theory, and, you know, you can have systems theory in science or in psychology or, you know, things like that, but if it's a system, you can apply the systems theory to it, okay? And that is that when a system is stressed enough, it breaks and it falls apart and it splinters. You know?
Right, and we're pretty much there. In fact, like occupying different things, I think we've reached some of those points, and it's been wonderful, even though there's been unfair arrests and things. But I mean, I'm very optimistic, but I'm one of those people that I know that the bad times aren't over.
No,
and that's why we have to keep talking to people and try to get them past the apathy. Or the denial to see that there's things that they can do. And education is powerful. So whether it's just educating your next door neighbor, your husband, whoever, or a class, it's important. We need to do it.
Well, and it's not always easy. A lot of times people don't want to hear what you have to say.
Exactly.
Block you out, and they'll make you the evil one, you know?
Right. Yeah, what are you trying to do shaking up my world? Well, because when you're in denial, I mean, that's basically it. People go into denial many times out of fear. because some part of them knows, if I know what's going on, if I know the country I live in is sending drones over and killing all these children in this country, we're not at war with them. We go spy on them and we kill their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Then I might have to take a stand. And I don't want to. I'm either too tired, I'm too disgruntled, I just don't think it'll matter. So don't tell me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Americans have been asleep for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And it's real easy for us to stay asleep because basically, I mean, we've got Canada to the north, Mexico to the south. We're not like Europe where we're surrounded by different countries.
And exactly.
We're isolated.
So many other countries are smaller than us.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you know, most of Europe is in the United States. Because they can, you know, take a good drive and hit a few countries in a day. And, you know, we can't do that. We've got a big country. And I don't know, but it just seems like it's so much easier for people now. Because even though, 40-some percent of the people here are under the poverty level or in the poverty level or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, still, poverty. Yeah.
Most people have things that they have adjusted to what they have,
mm-hmm.
and they're semi-comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
And until we shake that comfort
mm-hmm.
by something, they're not going to get it. I mean, a lot of them, even though they should know better, are still buying some of the stuff that I grew up hearing about. Well, you know, you live in America, you can be anything you want to be, you know,
right.
Play hard, work hard, whatever, you can be anything you want to be. And they think that, well, if they just can manage to find a job and work hard, you know,
mm-hmm.
they can sometime be a multimillionaire. And they aren't seeing at this point that the multimillionaires have stepped on a lot of people to make that money.
Yeah. Yeah, and that they are the ones directly responsible for the mess that we're in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not the guy on the street, the guy who can't find a job.
No.
He wants to work.
Yeah.
That lady, you know, on her porch, she wants to work. They want to support their family.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to take government handouts. Because, I mean, not that they don't have every right in the world to have it. I mean, that's not what they envision.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, I don't know. I really honestly, I'm like everybody else. I have no idea what's going to be happening to this country. But I just firmly believe, I can feel it, that it's about to hit a snag in the street. And things will be changing. For one thing, the FAA gave the go-ahead for surveillance drones in our skies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they've allotted something like, I think, 600 drones per state.
Well, I know that it's sort of going to depend, I guess, on the population or the larger cities or whatever, or what the people there ask, what the police departments ask for.
Well, the county sheriffs have they actually have the duty, because this is unconstitutional, they have the duty, but they have the final say-so. This is what I've read. That they have the final say-so over whether or not there will be drones flown in their county. But, you know, I haven't heard of anybody turning that down yet. And
now that's one of those things there again. They're either elected, part of the good old boy thing, or they're appointed, still part of the good old boy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're afraid if they, you know, do this, they won't be, I don't know. It's so much is tied to, I'm a person for term limits, so
yeah,
I don't like somebody being in there for 25 years.
No.
You know, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
The drone thing, like somebody said, well, it's okay, they're not armed. And I'm like, what the hell? In the first place, it doesn't take that much to arm a drone. But they're spying on you. Don't you get it? And it's like, well, I'm not doing anything. I'm not either, and I do care. I'm private enough.
Okay.
An only child, I had all the privacy I ever wanted, and I still demand privacy a lot because I need it. And in any kind of form. But I mean, I'm one of those also. You know, you can leave your house and leave your purse. I'll never look in it.
Yeah.
I'll never read your mail.
Yeah.
And people have been amazed because people haven't been that way with me a couple times. And as soon as they found out, it's like, you don't touch it. You don't, you know.
Yeah.
But, oh, okay. I've never known what's in any boyfriend's or husband's wallet unless they pulled it out and showed me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would never look. Because I really believe in privacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it's been our conversation.
Looking in my house?
Uh-uh. Yeah. And the scary part of it is that some of these drones actually have the power to kill us, all right?
Yes. Yes.
And further, they are notorious for being inaccurate. We've seen this with Pakistan. This is why Pakistan's hopping mad with us. It's because we've got aerial drones, and we're taking out just citizens on the sidewalk all over
the place.
We're
doing that in Somalia. We're doing it in Yemen.
Mm-hmm.
These are not terrorists. Don't let anybody tell you they are. No, we're killing the citizens. The other day, we wiped out a bunch of women and girls. The count was either 7 to 10. I wasn't sure when I compared things. Women were killed, and 7 were injured, some of them as young as 10. They went to the mountains. This is in Afghanistan. They went to the mountains, which they do a lot. They were gathering wood. It was the forest. They were gathering wood and nuts. And here we came. Is any wonder they hate us?
No. Not to me. And then, of course, there's all of the weddings that they've disrupted and, you know, funerals and whatnot. They're doing this in our name. That's what...
Yeah. That's what a lot of the time I spend online is talking with people in other countries. And they don't hate me. They don't hate us. They realize it's the government.
Yeah.
Just like we realize it's their government.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing. I mean, I'm just always, when I say this a lot, but it's true, I'm awed by the internet. Love it. It has brought people to a realization that we all want the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We all want a place to live, some food, a good education for our kids. We want good health.
Mm-hmm.
No matter where we live or what color we are. And so that's what's going to save us, is just the fact that this is my brother, this is my sister.
Our
armies are indoctrinated to think that other people are low lives, lower than them, and they deserve to die and things. But
right.
When you get enough people knowing about the people they're invading.
Yeah. It's really interesting to me. When I watch the moves that our government makes, I was in 1977. I was in the Soviet Union, and I was behind the Iron Curtain for a month, and I was just traveling, you know, as a tourist. I'm a curious person, so I wanted to know how these people were living. And I get there, and first of all, if you're out on the street or anywhere in public, you do not laugh, you do not smile, you don't do any of those things. Because there are like 4 KGB on every single street corner, just ready to pounce, right?
Yeah.
You couldn't trust your own mother not to betray you if you were doing anything illegal. You know, does this sound familiar here? What's that line? If you see something, say something.
Yeah. This whole thing.
That's what they do.
About kids reporting their parents.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Hitler had, like, Hitler's youth and all, they were to report their parents through. Yeah.
And it was very strange walking around because it was like these were not humans, living, thinking humans. They were robots. Their faces were blank, absolutely blank, just like Mitt Romney, just completely blank.
That looked soulless. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, like there's nobody inside. But... That was one thing I wanted to point out, and the propaganda. They had been so thoroughly propagandized, they had no clue as to what was going on in the outside world. And I see this all around me here in America, all over the damn place.
That is too sad.
Well,
yeah, because I get into it occasionally on a radio show I do with Brian Stetton, as far as, you know, I say that people are responsible for some of their ignorance. And he's going, but, you know, they've been brainwashed. And their parents, and they know nothing else. And I keep saying, well, you know, they've got a brain. And he's going, yeah, but they don't know how to use it. I mean, he's probably right. But because, I mean, I think, well, people have to take some kind of responsibility for stupid. But if they don't want to take it. And truly, if they've never seen any, I mean, if they come from a family that's pretty much dumbed down in their neighborhood and whatever.
Yeah, it's
and
normal
watch
for them.
TV. Exactly. That's normal. So, I don't know. I mean, somehow the people have got to learn, and we've got to start teaching responsibility.
Well, I don't know. You know, I don't know where we're going to end up. But one other thing I wanted to say about my trip to the Soviet Union before I moved on was you could not convince anybody that what they had been told was not right. You could not convince them. It did, and you could see in their faces it would just totally go completely blank. But while I was there, I had an attack of acute appendicitis, and I had to have my appendix removed.
Oh God!
And so they shuffled me off to the Botkin Clinic. In Moscow, and I was in there for 3 weeks, had my appendix removed, and they will not let you go until you're fully healed. I walked out of there. I never paid one dime. Not one dime. And while I was there, I had this kind of, I guess like a porridge or something, you know, for breakfast in the morning. It was really good, and I can't remember what dinner was, some kind of soup. But everybody's family and relatives would go visit them in the hospital and bring all kinds of food. And so I ate really well. Anyhow, everybody had a job, unless if you really got on the bad side of the government and they found out about it, then you were on the run. But otherwise, everybody had work. Nobody made a whole hell of a lot of money, but everybody had work. And these are people that never had very much to begin with.
Right.
And then, of course, the medical care was entirely free. And it was also cutting edge. It was the very latest, the way that they made the incision on my stomach.
See, and that's something that here you wouldn't think, because we were taught that the cutting edge, everything was here.
And it's not anymore.
And no, it's not.
Not anymore. Not. It hasn't been for a long time,
yeah.
And especially in science. And I cannot believe, because when I was growing up, and you probably had this too in school, the teachers were so excited about the space program. And John F. Kennedy was president, and he was going to take us to the moon.
I'm still excited about the space program, even though the United States doesn't have it.
Our generation is. But the younger people, I see this on comment boards all over the place. Why the hell are we going to outer space? We should be spending that money on, well, something else, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't get it.
Y'all don't get it. And, you know, take back that 50% of the total money that we take in the taxes that is going to fund wars.
Exactly.
And the space program is such a small, small, small amount in compared to all these other useless things.
Yeah. What we spend on war. Just the black budget alone. You know,
there's no excuse for that. And you know, the space program. Oh my God, it's paramount. I have a friend in Africa who is a young man who wants to be a cosmonaut, and I'm so excited because I didn't know people were still doing this. I mean, I know they are, but he's the first one I talked to, and it's like, oh yeah. This is wonderful. Because we really, really, and if the United States isn't going to do it, our young people, they're going to other countries because they are going to work in space. This is just a fact.
They're going to what now?
Work in space.
Mm-hmm.
In some, you know, they're either going to be a cosmonaut or they're going to be behind the boards on land. But they're, you know, a lot of them still do have that interest, but they're not getting it from school, I'll bet you.
No, I would very much doubt that. Very much doubt that. And it's interesting because we've been told that our kids are learning more science and math now than ever. Well, my husband taught for 20 years, and I will never forget the day he came home, and it was 2003, and he taught biology and physics at which was at that time the best public high school in America. And this was Lowell High School, and it's right in the city of San Francisco, founded like 170 years ago or something.
Mm.
And these are top-notch kids. Top, these are the you know, it's like, if you can graduate through Lowell, if you can graduate from there and get a diploma, you can name your prize. You can go anywhere. You can go anywhere.
Wow.
In the world.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had astronauts, Nobel Peace Prize winners, Nobel in medicine, Nobel Prize in medicine.
Mm.
I could go on and on and on. Oh, the one of the current justices on the Supreme Court, Breyer, he graduated from Lowell, and he gave some sort of speech one time, and he talked about, I would like to thank all of the fine teachers I had at Lowell High School. Oh, and where I graduated from. Oh, and all of the other teachers I had at all of the other schools I went to. He graduated from, like, Harvard and Princeton and, you know.
That's funny.
Yeah. Anyway, and so my husband comes home from work one day, and he is in utter shock. I mean, literally, really, utter shock. His face was white. I said, what on earth happened? He said, you're not going to believe this. There are just only a handful, a couple of kids, that know how to use a ruler. And this is high school.
You know how to use a what?
A ruler.
Okay, yeah.
For measuring?
Yeah.
They did not know how to use that. Uh-huh. That's frightening, you know?
Yeah, really. Yeah, I mean, I'm laughing because I'm appalled. Now they don't know multiplication tables or anything because they do it with the calculator. And I'm not saying that it's bad to have these tools, like calculators, but it's good to also know how to do it without one in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, yeah, not knowing how to use a ruler.
What happens if you're stranded somewhere, the power goes out, you don't have access to your calculator, but you've got to fix a huge hole in your roof before the monsoon gets in. You know what I'm saying?
I guess you just curl up in the corner. I don't know. I mean,
get blown away or killed.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and this is we're teaching our kids more math and science more now than ever before. Oh boy.
Yeah. What a joke that is. Yeah. I bet Tom, your husband, was in shock though.
He was. Yeah. In fact, he quit teaching shortly after that. Anyway, getting back
to at that point, he just, it's like, well, what can I do? I mean, he didn't want to go back to teaching them first or second grade skills.
No.
And,
no.
You know, that would be so discouraging. And I know he loves to teach. That was good. He's a good, you can tell, he's a good teacher.
Mm-hmm. He was excellent. He was awarded the best high school biology teacher of the year in California at least once.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. Because he started talking about different things, mm-hmm. and his face just lights up. So,
yeah.
You know, he knows his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure that the kids loved him. But, yeah, when you have two that know how to use a ruler, at that point it's just like, I don't know what I'm doing here.
Before I get off the air, I would just like to give a few terms out for anybody or website.
Okay. Yeah.
For anybody who's interested in learning more about the Dominionist thing, because it is a very serious threat. And
yeah.
I will also say that I live here in Tennessee, mega Bible Belt.
Yeah.
And every pagan I've ever met here, each of us has a negative story to tell about something that happened to us that was, at the very minimum, hurtful, very hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no freedom of religion here. I'm going to say that right now. There is no freedom of religion here. And it, unless you were Baptist, you will not fit in here very well.
Yeah.
You know, so we're hermits. I mean, you know, we've got
yeah.
in the outlying, but in the immediate, you know, town, no. Yeah. Anyway, so if you want to learn more, like I mentioned talk2action.org, and that's
right.
the numeral 2. Okay, and I would highly recommend researching the New Apostolic Reformation, REFORMATION, New Apostolic Reformation. You'll get millions of results there. The leader slash founder, C. Peter Wagner, Wagner, started the New Apostolic Reformation.
Peter Wagner, or did you put there an initial ahead of that?
C, as in Charles, Peter
C.
Wagner.
Peter Wagner. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you might also want to search out Howard Amundsen, AHMAN as in Nicholas, S as in Susan, O, N as in Nicholas.
Oh.
Amundsen. I mean, this guy is uber... He's uber, uber rich, and he's uber, uber nuts, and he is an uber Christianista. I mean, he's militant. And he donates to all of the... He funds a whole lot of crazy stuff. So, anyway, there's him.
Okay.
New Apostolic Reformation plus Sarah Palin. All right. Michelle Bachman. Rick Perry. There's another one, but I can't think of Rick Santorum.
Oh, you said, what's his?
Rick Santorum.
Oh, yeah, him.
Yeah.
Okay, he had his
yeah.
name. He did something stupid again. I mean, well, they all do constantly, so it's hard to keep up.
Yeah, really?
Okay, I'll take his name now.
Senator Sam Brownback from the Midwest. I can't remember off the top of my head which state. He's heavily entrenched in the family and with a lot of this dominionism. And that's Sam Brownback, Brownback. And you can Google his name plus dominionism.
Right. Wow, you gave us a lot of info here. I'm going to look some of these up. I am going to go to talktoaction.org. Is the, like, okay. Something's happening before I hit the New Apostolic Reformation because I think that's going to make me ill.
Yeah.
So you would say that really the best thing for people to do is to research and be aware, educate.
Yes.
That's how we can combat it. But we have to know what it is.
Know thine enemy, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, our government has declared war on the U.S. citizens.
Yeah.
You know, they're arguing over that provision in the NDAA over whether or not they're going to be able to shoot on sight any U.S. citizen they deem a terrorist or whatever.
Right.
And,
so because they're appealing that, they're trying to change that, and after the judge again has said, you know, this is on holding water.
Yeah, they're really pushing for it.
Yeah. And that's just another thing that Obama had, you know, I mean, people were surprised that he would go for it.
Yeah.
But then they're being paid by the corporations like Monsanto and things, and now we're in a fight for the labeling GMOs.
Obama was raised by the CIA. He is a third-generation CIA brat. He had one set of grandparents that were CIA. Also, his mother and father were. And when he was growing up in Indonesia, his family often had to take extended trips, like for several months, out from their area. And so,
when you say parents, you mean the Indonesian man, his mother Mary.
I'm talking his parents and his I don't think his
right. Maybe not his Kenyan father, but the Indonesian guy who raised him.
Yeah.
But I've got to let you go. Don't forget, everybody, greeneggzine.com. You can find Ariel there. And she's not on Facebook by herself, by her name, but hopefully one of these days she will be. So,
we have a Green Egg Zine Facebook page.
Right, there. Yes, there is. It's there. So we're going to go out with Hamlet Hawk again, my man in Iceland. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ruthann. Good night.
Good night. Happy weekend.